is a special edition of the Sean Hannity Show. The radicals have taken over. Hold on to your wallets. Your taxes are ready to go sky high. It's time to stand up for our military.
Did you hear me, O'Shaughnessy?
How the hell is Sean Hannity shaping media direction?
I'll put Mr. Burgess up against Sean Hannity. He'll tear him up.
The Sean Hannity Show starts right here, right now.
Right, conservative underground, conservatism in exile, Sean Hannity Show, Stop Obama, Radical Express, and glad you are a part of it. I want to tell you what I did this weekend. Beyond the usual family stuff and tennis and taking my kids everywhere they need to go, we've been reading all over the country about these tea parties that are emerging. For example, the Orlando Sentinel, apparently there was a tea party that had over 4,000 this weekend. There was a crowd last week in Cincinnati, over 5,000. And they have pretty much been happening all around the country. But I never seen any. I never saw anything like what we saw Saturday night at the Great One's book review appearance. In what was the biggest appearance in the history of book review, with 6,000 people literally. And this is probably one of the biggest bookstores you'll ever go to, and just packed to the brims, out the door, down the block, around the block, around the next block, and then around the block after that. And I had an opportunity to meet so many people that were there on Saturday night. But there's a reason for this, and that is that there is a growing movement in this country that we have got to take this country back from the path on which it's now headed. And Mark Levin, I think, wrote the definitive book on this, to quote my good friend, our mutual friend, David Limbaugh, that it is a masterful restatement of conservative principles. And as conservatism, this book could not be more relevant than it is now. And I got to tell you something. I predict this book will define liberty for hundreds of years. It is that well written, that well researched. And for any conservative out there, this is a must read. It's called Liberty and Tyranny, a Conservative Manifesto. And it's great to see the Great One back in New York. Sir, how are you?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
You're a great American.
Well, thanks for all that. Wasn't that unbelievable? All
that was unbelievable.
Men. And you know what? Patriots, people, and see, every one of them said that they want to do something in the next election, that we need to, you know, to beat back these folks. This backlash isn't coming. This backlash is here.
It's here. But skipping to the end of the book, and then I'm going to go back right to the beginning where it all starts. You know, you say that so distant is America today from its founding principles that it's difficult to precisely describe the nature of American government. And then you have a call to action. You said the conservative has got to become more engaged in public matters. It says it's in the conservative's nature to live and let live, to attend to their family, to volunteer, to go to their church and synagogue, to assist their friends and neighbors. You say this is no longer enough. Explain that.
Well, you know, we are good citizens, we conservatives. We actually love this country. We embrace its traditions, its customs, its values. We understand its history. We understand the enormous sacrifice that Americans have made before us. We embrace our Declaration of Independence. We talk about it. We embrace the Constitution. We talk about it. The problem is that whether it's the media or academia or the politicians, including a lot of Republicans today, they don't. They don't talk about it. It's constant complaining about the society, constant playing toward and pandering for toward grievances, always agitating for more and more big government, which steamrollers the Constitution and the individual. And you know what, Sean? We are the biggest army of patriots there can possibly be. We're bigger than ACORN, the ACLU, and all the left-wing groups put together. And if we would take the time as grandparents and parents, to first of all make sure that the young people in our families understand why this is a great country, understand certain key principles, so that they are armed to fight their teachers and their fellow students, so that they are armed one day to go into the media, which the status controls. They don't have a birthright to this, to go into academia, to go into politics, to go into being judges and clerks and all the areas where the status is today and where he controls today. If we would do that with our family and with our neighbors and with our friends, if we would become active Paul Revere's of sorts, We can defeat them because there are tens of millions of us, and while there are a lot of drones, they're really not engaged that much.
You're right. They can no longer be left to the devices of the statist. And I'm going to go back and go through your definition of terms here because they're very, very important. But you say this will require a new generation of conservative activists, larger in number, shrewder, more articulate than ever before, who seek to blunt the statist counter-revolution, not imitate it, and then gradually and steadily reverse course.
Right.
Now, that's what I know everybody wants to do, especially in light of the Obama radical agenda.
Well, this is very important. Folks need to understand that it took us 80 years to get here. It took 80 years to destroy the firewalls in the Constitution, to evade the constitutional limits. You see it today in what's going on in Congress. You have basically a mob. These people are a mob, this Congress. You see a president of the United States who has no regard for the limits on government whatsoever. He makes proposal after proposal. None of it is tied to the Constitution because they can't tie it to the Constitution. You see court after court ruling in favor of the statists. The statists will explain in a minute. So all the branches of government are working together against the individual, are largely undermining the Constitution, rejecting the Declaration of Independence, that is, rejecting our history in this massive and expedient lurch to the hard left. And what I'm saying is, you know, these institutions don't belong to the statists. We have every right to go take them too. And the way you take them is to ensure that the next generation and the generation after that is armed with information and goes into these fields and takes these institutions back. And it's going to take time, but we need to start right now.
One of the things you do brilliantly in the book is you define conservatism and its history. And, you know, you say, to put it succinctly, conservatism is a way of understanding life, society, governance. And then you go through the great history of our founders and our framers and who influenced them, you know, certain philosophers and who they are and what they said. And, you know, this battle for, quote, the mantle of true conservatism, you address that, too.
Yeah, you know, I'm not interested in all the clutter that's out there, all the egomaniacs claiming that they're leading a new revolution or what have you. I want us to, first of all, become confident in our beliefs, to understand them, to understand the root of them, to understand why we are on the right side of history, to embrace them and be confident about them, and try and wipe a lot of this clutter away from people who are trying to rewrite it and trying to impress us, and they don't. Nobody will impress us more than Adam Smith, than Charles Montesquieu, than John Locke, than Edmund Burke, all the great philosophers and statesmen from which we borrow in order to advance conservatism. None of the Johnny-come-latelys come close to that. Nobody's going to impress us more than George Washington and Benjamin Franklin, than Madison and Hamilton and John Jay. We're impressed plenty by these men because they actually did something. They won a revolution. They created the most magnificent society that the earth has ever known, the most humane and compassionate form of government man has ever known. And we have people who are systematically and persistently deconstructing it. And the reason I don't call them liberals, as I explain in the book, the modern liberal is not a liberal, because a liberal would be the opposite of an authoritarian in its classical meaning. He is a statist. The liberal today is a statist. Barack Obama promotes government, 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 first, second, and third. Pelosi, Reid, the same. And they're not the first. This has been going on since FDR. They don't represent the little guy. They represent the bureaucrat. They don't represent the businessman. They represent the bureaucrat. And the other point I would like to make about this is we conservatives are excited about our society. We want to defend our society. We're excited about our economic system. The statist is a malcontent. Just listen to them. Because man is imperfect, which he is, and his institutions are imperfect, which they are, and which they will always be. For the statist, he views this as an opportunity for exploitation, an opportunity to promise a utopia that is a utopia of his own mind that he cannot ever create on this earth, and to seize more and more of the individual's rights and to seize their and to empower himself. And there's one other thing I should mention at the front end here. The Declaration of Independence is key because it lays out what our founders believed in the most articulate and concise way possible.
Well, I want to add emphasis to this because your timely quotations of the great philosophers that our framers and our founders relied on, the timely quotations of the Declaration and the Articles of Confederation and the Constitution, as you go through, I mean, like a prosecuting attorney, you just keep building the case and using this as the platform to point out this is what they believe and why they believe it. It makes this book so educational, Mark. It's really, I can't even describe in detail, and nor in 1 hour of interviewing you, just how well put together this whole is. But I want to put emphasis on your description of the statist, because you talk about modern liberalism and how they believe in the supremacy of the state and how they reject the principles of the Declaration and the order of civil society in whole or in part, and how for the modern liberal, I'm quoting you here, the individual's imperfection and personal pursuits impede the objective of a utopian state. And you said, you know, as the word liberal is in its classical meaning, the opposite of authoritarian, it is more accurate, therefore, to characterize the modern liberal as a statist. Just to expand on that a little more.
Well, because what the liberal, the statist, or the liberal as some would call, but wrongly now, what the statist wants to do is one thing, expand his power by centralizing power under him or under a group of people with whom he agrees. And there are also statists who don't themselves seek power, but they want people to seek power so that they can take things from other people. The point is, this is truly a foreign way of thinking in this country. So the point is that the statist wants to destroy that which makes the country great: individual initiative, independence, self-sufficiency, innovation. They want to dispirit the citizen, so that the citizen eventually surrenders to the state. They create what de Tocqueville calls a soft tyranny. You want health care? You got to go to the government. You know, you need some kind of a subsidy to eat? You've got to go to the government. You need some kind of a subsidy for your home? You got to go to the government. You want permission to drive a certain kind of car? Well, the government has to give that permission to build them. And on and on and on. And when you look through our industries, when you look through our society, really, how much is left that's literally free of the government taxation or regulation at every level? How much is left? Precious little. And that's why the time is now to push back, to contain this and to push back, stop disputing what our principles are. Once you've read this book, you'll understand not just what our principles really are from a general point of view, but why they are our principles. And Sean, that's why this book took so long to write.
Well, I know it took long because I talked to you throughout the whole process, which was 16, 18 months it took you to write this thing. One of the things that stands out, Mark, and you articulate it so well, is the relevancy as you go through and make your case for conservatism and its past and its present. You know, the relevancy of what has gone on, and, for example, what our founders understood. To quote you, is the greatest threat to liberty is this all-powerful central government where the few dictate to the many. And you really lay out where we sort of went off course. For example, the New Deal, breaching the Constitution's firewalls, et cetera, et cetera. So, and now what makes it relevant to me is now we're almost doubling and quadrupling down on that New Deal mentality, and you make that case too.
Well, as much as we need to understand ourselves, we need to understand our adversary. And for the statist, liberty is not a blessing, but the enemy. And for him, it's not possible to achieve utopia if individuals are free to go their own way. So the individual is dehumanized, and he's delegitimized. And they keep talking about the public interest and the public good as if they have clairvoyance and they know with exactitude what that is. And so they use persuasion and deception and coercion to subordinate the individual to the state, because the individual must abandon his own ambitions for the ambitions of the state, and he must become reliant on and fearful of the state. And if you listen to Obama and you listen to these other folks, they are constantly screeching, they're constantly preaching this effect. So they want to dispirit the individual, and they want the individual to be molded by the state, to do what the state wants them to do, to live the way the state wants them to do. In other words, we're not viewed as individuals, but as groups and statistics.
Well said. I want to get this fine point before we take a break. We're going long here. By the way, Mark will join us tonight. And by the way, a rare TV appearance. I can never get him on TV. Why don't you ever come on my TV show, by the way?
Let me tell you, I polished my head for this.
Let me quote you from this book. The conservative does not despise government. He despises tyranny. Conservatism is the antidote to tyranny precisely because its principles are the founding principles. I mean, it's very...
There is no other antidote to tyranny but conservatism, because conservatives embrace our founding principles. The statist rejects them. That's why they reject the Constitution as written, and they try to rewrite it on the fly.
All right, we got to take a break. We'll come back. Mark Levin, the great one, is with us, nationally syndicated radio talk show host, friend of ours. His brand new book, The Roadmap to Freedom. We could call it as a subtitle. It's Liberty and Tyranny, a Conservative Manifesto. Mark, by the way, in a rare TV appearance, will join us tonight on Hannity on the Fox News Channel. Dick Morris tonight. This now out today, this book. It's on Hannity.com. It's on Amazon.com. And it's in bookstores everywhere. And 6,000 people showed up Saturday night in Long Island to meet Mark. And to all the people that we couldn't say hello to, we apologize. It was just unbelievable, the size of this crowd. We'll take a break. We'll come back. More with the great one. He'll join us tonight on TV, and we will continue.
Sean Hannity. You.
All right, we did a long segment with the great one, Mark Levin. Let not your heart be troubled, though. He sticks around for one more segment here. His brand new book out today, Liberty and Tyranny, a Conservative Manifesto. You know, folks, when you read this book, you're going to learn something in every sentence. I'm telling you, it is chock full of wisdom. We'll continue with the great one. He also joins us on Hannity tonight at 9.
The broadcast that everybody who is anybody talks about. Here's Sean Hannity.
Hello, Garth Brooks. By the way, the only good thing about the appearance on Jay Leno the other night was that Garth Brooks showed up. Anyway, we continue. The great one, Mark Levin, is with us. His brand new book is out today. We've got it featured on our website, Hannity.com. It's at Amazon.com, and now it is in bookstores all across this country. Barnes & Noble, front of store, everywhere. Destined to be a number one bestseller because this book is as timely and as relevant and as important as any book that I have ever read. And I'm not saying that just because Mark is my friend. This book is this is the time for this book. And it talks about statism, about liberalism. It looks at the dangers of where Barack Obama's agenda is ultimately going to take this country. You know, one of the things you say, Mark, in this book, you say that, you know, the conservatives understand, we understand that Americans are living in a state of diminishing liberty, that statism is on the ascendancy, and the societal balance is tipping away from ordered liberty. And in these circumstances, you're right, the conservatives should not confuse prudence with timidity. If anything, certainly since the New Deal, the conservative has too often lacked the confidence and persistence to defend the civil society.
Mm-hmm. Well, the civil society is organized liberty. You know, it's our constitutional form of government. It's a transcendent moral order. You know, difference between good and bad, right and wrong, just and unjust, that transcends everything. Unalienable rights given to man by God, not by man, so man can't take it. Given to man not by government, so government can't legitimately take it. These are things that we as individuals, conservatives, believe. We believe rights come from natural law, which comes from, you know, a superior being, God. Rights don't come from man. That's what differentiates us from the statists. Although I'm not saying they don't believe in God and so forth, but you hear them speaking all the time about redistributing rights. They also redefine liberty. Have you noticed that? Because freedom used to mean freedom from coercion, freedom to do as you wish. For the status, freedom means freedom from want. And what that means is that the statists will exploit it, will promote a phony utopianism, and he'll steal liberty, and he'll steal property. And that's what he's doing right now. And if you listen to Obama and you listen to the other state, by the way, I started this book before Obama was president, before all this had occurred. I updated it right before publication to include aspects of his administration and things that were going on up to about 6 or 8 or 12 weeks ago. But that said, Obama is not unique in the sense that he is a quintessential statist. He does not trust individuals. He does not like the Constitution. I know this is controversial, but it's true. None of the statists do. That's why they put activists on the Supreme Court who talk about living and breathing and foreign law, because they do not want to comply with the Constitution.
Let me add a line here that you use as it relates to this. You said, for the statists, liberty is not a blessing but the enemy. And then you go on to say the individual must be dehumanized.
Right.
And his nature delegitimized.
That's correct.
And now, then you have one other sentence here. You say, through persuasion, deception, and coercion, the individual must be subordinated to the state. Now, I want you to deal with that, especially, I haven't told you this, because you read to me a number of months ago, you read to me some of the chapter that you were writing at the time. Now, this goes back maybe 6, 8 months ago, on faith. My favorite chapter in this book is on faith and founding. It's the third chapter of the book. And I'll get into some of the specifics on this, but it's the antithesis of what you wrote that I just described.
The bottom line, the law is being used to intimidate the individual. That's what you see going on in Congress, to punish his success, to obstruct his future. Independence and self-worth and self-sufficiency are all under the attack, and the goal is for government control. And Obama has talked about this. He has said that we're 5% of the world's population and we use 25% of the world's wealth. Well, if he wants us to use 5% of the world's wealth, I guess we have to become poorer. And if we resist, I guess we have to be punished or repressed in some way. And I was also, I explained in the book, if you look at the Constitution, the First Amendment's under attack, because they want to shut down talk radio. The Second Amendment's under attack, the right to bear arms. The Fifth Amendment, the taking clause on property, is under attack. The Tenth Amendment, the legitimate rights of states, states that created the federal government, which are now basically appendages to the federal government, are under attack. I can't find anywhere in the Constitution, unless you're a terrorist, where rights are actually being rights that come from the Constitution and ultimately from the Creator, where rights are actually being expanded. They're under assault across the board by the statists.
You make one of the best cases in this book than anybody that I've ever listened to as it relates to faith without just using pure reason and logic. I want to quote an entire paragraph here, and I want our audience to just...
I love it when you quote my brilliance.
Well, but it shows what a deep thinker you are, and I want people to understand that while this book quotes our founders and our framers and lays out a case for conservatism better than any that I have read in my adult lifetime, I mean, this is comparable to Barry Goldwater and A Conscience of a Conservative, but it's readable, relatable, and frankly is as timely and as any book I've ever read in light of the massive government grab we have going on right now and the belief in the state versus the individual that we're now debating. But you say about faith in your third chapter, you say reason and science can explain the existence of matter, but they can't explain why there is matter. They can explain the existence of the universe, but they can't explain why there is a universe. They can explain the existence of nature and the law of physics, but they can't explain why there is nature and the law of physics. They can explain the existence of life, but they can't explain why there is life. They can explain the existence of consciousness, but they can't explain why there is consciousness. And I'm not doing it's justice or service here, but you lay out a case for God. You know, I've often said that atheism is a belief that something can come from nothing. You just are far more articulate than I am in saying it.
Well, what I was trying to do here is not proselytize. What I was trying to do was figure out, and this is why it took so long. I went back to the basics. I went to Plato and Aristotle and Cicero, and I went from them forward, and I went through with Locke and Burke and Adam Smith and Thomas Paine. What drove these men? Why do we have this society? Why did they do what they did and put everything on the line? And why am I a conservative? And why is it so inbred in my heart and soul? And so I went through these different areas and worked through them, and that's what took the time in developing this. So it's not just a slapdash, talking point, goofy kind of book, but something that may have a lasting appeal. And on faith, I said, I have to address this because, as the reader will find out, the founding fathers, you hear a lot about, well, Jefferson was a deist and Franklin was a deist, and that's probably right. They were. But you know what a deist is? They believe in God, too. They just have a different view, that if you pray to God, that God isn't there at your beck and call to do what you ask him to do. And yet it was Jefferson who first drafted the Declaration of Independence, which included some of the references to God in the Declaration of Independence. It was the committee that saw it next, with Franklin as one of the committee members, and Adams, John Adams, and they added additional words. And then it went to the full body, and they added even further words. The point is this. The position of our founding is, and this is irrefutable, that your unalienable rights are unalienable because they come from God. How else can they be unalienable? If they come from man or man's creation or from man's mind, that doesn't make them unalienable. That just makes them convenient. And so to reject it, I argue, is to reject the Declaration of Independence. Now, look, I'm not trying to be controversial. I'm just trying to be rational about this. And furthermore, even if you're an individual who is a conservative, I don't really believe in God, you're free to believe whatever you want. The point is you cannot organize a society that way. And the further point is our founders did not organize a society that way. They rejected a theocracy completely, as we all do, but there's no question that faith played a role in what they did, and to reject that is to ignore our founding.
That's what you said, though. You said this is the natural law that penetrates man's being and which the founders adopted as the principle around which civilized American society would be organized.
Because what other principle can there be other than God-given unalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? There are no other principles that matter. And if man gives them, then man can take them away. If government gives them, government can take them away. These are unalienable rights, whether you live in Zimbabwe or Burma or Red China or Russia or Boston, Massachusetts.
You know, one of the things I often say is one of the things that makes capitalism so perfect, Mark, is that it has this belief. It's predicated on the individual versus the state. And that, you know, as people pursue their own lifestyle, their own way of living, they're also benefiting society. If they're producing goods and services that people want, need, and desire, and they're making a profit, they're also creating a betterment of society. We have advanced the human condition. America has more than any other country that I can think of, and we've done it in record time because of that liberty, because of that freedom, because people were able to create. It's their God-given talents that are brought to fruition.
Well, capitalism, or free markets, is nothing more than an extension of human liberty.
Yep.
Because look at the repressive regimes. What's the first thing they do? They steal private property. They steal it directly, or they steal it through confiscatory tax rates, and they quote-unquote redistribute wealth. Everybody knows, including the statist, that private property and liberty go hand in hand, just as moral order and liberty go hand in hand. And so that's the attack. But I want folks to think about something. We don't have a president who stands up day in and day out and says, look at these marvelous medical devices that we invented in the United States through our capitalist system. Look at these marvelous devices that we've invented to make life better, to extend life, to improve life, to create luxuries that man has never known before on the face of the earth. Look at all these wonderful things we have in this country. Food, clothing, more than any other nation on the face of the earth. Look at the wonders of capitalism and free market. Instead, we have a president who does what? Trashes it, day in and day out. The rich versus the poor, which is purely Marxism, by the way. And then they talk about this much venerated, righteous middle class. They hate this venerated, righteous middle class because there is literally no such thing as a middle class, a poor class, or an upper class in our system because we don't have a static caste structure. Rich people can become poor. Poor people can become rich. No two people are alike. No two businesses are alike. So they try to categorize people, stick them in these categories so they can do what? Oh, that guy has more than you do. Oh, that guy has less than you do. Oh, we've got to rearrange the decks here. So the middle class is shrinking. The rich are getting bigger. The poor, and this is the way they deceive. This is the way they manipulate.
You know, I would be negligent, and I'm looking at the clock, and we're really just touching the surface here of all that is in this book. Mark Levin is with us, the great one, Liberty and Tyranny, a Conservative Manifesto. By trade, you are a constitutional attorney. You wrote a chapter on the Constitution. And you, as articulately as anybody, as I've heard, you lay out the case of why conservatives are originalists, believing that much like a contract, the Constitution sets forth certain terms and conditions for governing, and you write that hold the same meaning today as they did yesterday and should tomorrow.
And in this, I agree with Madison and Jefferson, because we all understand that if the terms, when you enter into a social contract, which is what the Constitution is, if the terms, meanings change, then you have no contract. What you have is a circumstantial, relative, political document that any generation in any given time can change. And this is the point. You need to pass this law, our national law, from one generation to the next intact. So there's stability in our society. But what's happening with the leftists is we have an extremely selfish generation of activists who believe that not only are they going to bankrupt our country by imposing entitlements on the next generation because they're selfish as hell, but they want to keep changing the Constitution so there is no link with past generations when it comes to the rule of law respecting the Constitution. They want to throw it all up in the air. And this is what Obama means by change. The conservative, by change, he means reform, as Edmund Burke did. Reform meaning to improve or better our society, not to completely obliterate certain institutions of our society. And the conservative also believes that our principles are principles that have developed and proven true over centuries and centuries, whereas the problem with the status is he likes to experiment and tamper with human beings.
All right, the great one, Mark Levin, is with us. We're only touching the surface. His brand-new book, it's in bookstores today. It's on Amazon.com. It's featured on Hannity.com. Is out there. It's called Liberty and Tyranny, a Conservative Manifesto. And the great one will join us tonight on Hannity on the Fox News Channel. Also, Dick Morris tonight, our Great American Panel, much more. And, Mark, stay right there. We'll give a preview of TV when we come back. Now, by the way, your computer, we all have computers, your hard drive, it's filled with, you know, irreplaceable stuff. You know, family photos, videos, music collections, business documents, financial documents, college term papers. If you write a book like Mark, or I wrote my book, you know what? It's on your computer. Every computer is vulnerable to failure and data loss. Now, it's happened to me. I spent once literally thousands of dollars trying to retrieve things that I had written. Now, the most common forms of failure are data loss and hard drive crashes, theft, losses, viruses, accidental deletion. Every week, 140,000 hard drives are going to crash in the U.S. Every week, 12,000 laptops are lost or stolen in U.S. airports. Now, that's why Mosey Online Backup, I use them to protect all my valuable computer files. It's easy to use. It's very secure and private. It runs automatically. It doesn't interfere with the performance of my computer. And you don't ever have to worry about backups, ever. Why? Because Mosey is just set it and forget it. And it's for less than $5 a month. For more information, just visit Mosey.com. That's M-O-Z-Y.com. And as a special offer, just enter the promo code Hannity at checkout. Mosey, back up your computer. Save your data. Save your future.
John Hannity.
All right, the great one, Mark. The book is phenomenal. I love you. I'm glad you're on TV tonight. I wish I can get you more often. It's called Liberty and Tyranny, a Conservative Manifesto. The great one, a rare television appearance tonight. By the way, what are you going to put makeup on and stuff? Well?
No, I'm going to wear a hat.
The great one, Mark Levin. Get this book, Liberty and Tyranny, a Conservative Manifesto. We'll see Mark tonight on TV. It's in bookstores everywhere. Back here tomorrow, Conservative Underground.